This is Judith Lay welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio. Talking about a very unusual aircraft and planting a vineyard. That's what we're doing on the programme today, after we've listened to, or maybe even sung along with, the choir of Trinity College Melbourne, and I heard the voice of Jesus say, "Come unto me and rest." Aviation Fellowship is the world's largest humanitarian air operator, providing healthcare, communications and learning technology services to more than 1,000 aid agencies, as well as thousands of isolated indigenous villages in the most remote areas of the world. And the man who buys aircraft for them joins me this morning to talk about his latest adventure. He's David Doricott, and his company, Ramsey-based AFD Software, also known as the Postcode People, is famous for its annual charity giveaway, when a substantial amount of company profits are shared out between local and global good causes. And over the years, to mark special milestones in the life of the Postcode People, not one but two aircraft have been purchased and donated to Mission Aviation Fellowship. The most recent one has just gone into service, and David Doricott is going to tell us all about it.
It's really exciting, Judith, because just a few days ago, we got the opportunity to get up at a ridiculously early hour of the morning, I think it was 4:30 a.m., to celebrate a virtual arrival of our plane, now branded as P2 AFD. P2 is the Papua New Guinea code for aircraft, and they've kindly put our letters of our business, AFD, on the end of it. And it was arriving in Mount Hagen, after a 5-hour flight from near Cairns in Australia. It was such a big event that the airport fire brigade came out to spray a water arch for the plane to fly through. Really big news, because the other thing that happened was the two national newspapers in Papua New Guinea ran full-page spreads. Aircraft arrives to help all the villages, and we're thinking, here's the little Isle of Man in the middle of the Irish Sea is being celebrated from the arrival of this aircraft. But even more exciting was 2 days later, we got another press release from the team at Mount Hagen to say that our plane had already set off and was completely muddy, because one of the villagers with no shoes to his feet, which is quite normal in those villages, needed to be transported, and he walked up the steps and left a trail of footsteps behind it. And I thought, this is why the aircraft went there. It's not for the celebration, it's not for the glitz and the glam, it's actually to help real people on the ground, and dare I say it, in the air too.
This is a working plane that is going to change people's lives. But just do a quick rewind. Mission Aviation Fellowship is an international charity that you have been supporting for a number of years. This is the second plane that you have bought for them. A cool couple of million, $2.5 million, something like that is the price tag on it. And it is a long journey. And the interesting thing is that with the second plane that you've gifted to them, that you have shown us that the various stages, you know, you don't just take a plane off the shelf and send it to where it needs to be. It starts its life in the States. It has then to go elsewhere and be specially adapted and tested. And then rightly, Mission Aviation Fellowship use it to show people, to showcase what a plane does, and you know, and the generosity of somebody who pays for it. And then it goes, as you say, to its working destination. But it is a life changer, isn't it?
It's completely life changing for communities. We really have no comprehension. If we want something, we go down the town, we buy it online, and it arrives the next day. And that can be simple things. So I think we all get the idea of the air ambulance. We see them, you're on the Isle of Man, somebody has a motor accident, and they're immediately airlifted, maybe to Nobles or out to one of the UK hospitals. And that bit we sort of understand because we have experience of it. But what happens if you need a spare part for your generator? How do you do that if going to the shop is a 3-day journey through the bush? If the river isn't in spate, you can cross it. You may have to be out there being eaten alive by all the bugs. And if you're injured or if you're poor and you can't afford that. So Mission Aviation Fellowship, as you know, was started by aviators actually in three spheres of the world after the Second World War. Pilots who set off with derring do, a bit like Biggles, in the late 40s, early 50s, and established this wonderful opportunity to serve Jesus, because it's a Christian organisation. We've just said goodbye to Jack Hemmings, who was one of the two guys in the British expression of MAF. And Jack died just a few weeks ago. About a year ago, he was flying a Spitfire. He was quite a remarkable man. And Stuart King, the other guy, his partner, actually visited the Isle of Man on one of the tours on our first aircraft. So these guys, having used aircraft as part of warfare, wanted to use aircraft as humanitarian good. And now MAF is the world's largest humanitarian airline by a very long stroke. It has hundreds of aircraft in multiple sectors in Africa, in South America, in North Australia, and in Papua New Guinea and Borneo, which are the two areas we know best. And what they're doing is providing a lifeline. It's sometimes the simple things that really are most profound. When Alison and I visited Mount Hagen, we carried stationery for the high school that is completely cut off from normal communications. But this high school provides a way of extending education for young people growing up in the rainforest. Moving them out to a city would have completely been cultural horror for them. But wind back a little bit further, and one of our flights was carrying the deputy head teacher to that high school to take up his role from the village that we visited. I'm going backwards, because he was the first person in that village to have ever gone through a university of education, and all because of MAF, because it's a Christian organisation. All the people serving in it are doing it as an expression of their faith, giving up sometimes very lucrative jobs. I mean, obviously, those who are pilots could earn heck of a lot of money in commercial aviation, but they choose to go and serve these remote communities, bringing hope and help and healing.
And also, it's dangerous. We are not talking about even small airstrips. We are talking about a field where an animal might wander across just as you're about to land the plane.
I secretly think that actually this is proper flying. I think the pilots actually quite like the challenge. But I remember as we're visiting one strip, it was a category D. They start at A, easy, to D, challenging. And this was an airstrip that was one way, so you have to fly out of it the way you fly into it. Usually you fly through an airport. If you land the same way you take off, you can't do that here because there's a hill, and actually there are ridges at either side. And we were probably about 2 miles away when the pilot says, I'm approaching the point of no return. If we go past this point, I have to land. There is no way out. I can't abort the landing. But we better first make sure that there are no water buffalo on the runway and no people there, because there is no air traffic control, there's no radar control. There is a radio set on the ground just to communicate with the village, but that's about it. But these guys do this every day, and they maybe do it 20 times a day where they're going into these places. And of course, when you land, the whole community comes out to greet the plane because they know how precious this ability to stock up with the essentials, to bring construction materials, maybe solar panels so they have a little bit of electricity, or it may be just instant chicken noodles, which we also sell landed.
You know, just think of a pregnant woman. She can't walk through the jungle.
No.
Even if there was a reasonably safe path, you can't walk for a couple of days if you need medical treatment.
Those things, they're the ones that we really latch onto, of course. Or it may be an accident. Somebody's been cutting down a tree, it's landing on his head, or a motorcycle, because they sometimes use trail bikes through the forest. Being able to get that person in sometimes just minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes from that location, as opposed to that trek through the jungle. And sometimes the trek through the jungle is not even possible. And in some parts of the world where MAF operate, security is one of the reasons why MAF operate, rather than terrain. It may well be that there's banditry, there's warring factions. And because the air bridge is there, other agencies can often go in to do things like clinics or education or teaching agriculture, because they can both be got in and in emergency got out. So that MAF airbridge facilitates other agencies, government, NGOs, as well as charitable organisations. Thinking some countries in Africa have been turbulent, as we keep hearing in the news. I remember that one of Stuart and Jack's first targets was Sudan. And I only need to say that, and we all think about how many cycles of warfare and violence and civil unrest has prevented development. And development may be many things, but one of the biggest tragedies is that if you can't invest in young people's education because you can't bring the teachers in or the materials, then how do they break out of poverty? And the cycle of poverty just goes on and on and builds dependency. If you can release education because you can get the teachers in and out and the materials in and out, then perhaps you give people a pathway forward rather than the panic that sends them into the hands of people traffickers. And we know what that means. It leads to slavery. It means children are sold into horrendous things that no parent would like to contemplate. But when you have no options, I love the fact that MAF give options to very many people throughout the world.
And MAF can give options because you give them the tools of the trade, because it's not just two planes. Your support goes on in between the planes, because you've chosen to give the planes some milestones in your own company's development. But in between, every year, you're making substantial donations to the maintenance of their work.
I just need to correct the idea that I personally do this. We have an amazing team of approaching 50 members of staff who are excellent in helping people deliver things through the media of the post and courier services. As the postcode people, we have a very successful business here in the north of the Isle of Man. And Alison and I acknowledge that without their generation of the funds that we are able to direct, we wouldn't be able to do any of these things.
You're absolutely right. And you reflect this dependency upon your team, because when you have your annual charity giveaway, you have a list of all the charities you're supporting, and a huge proportion of them are chosen by your staff because they're causes that are close to their heart. And so the money that you put aside for your charitable giveaways, which is always a huge amount of money, goes to local and global causes that are important to your staff. So it's all about your Christian, deep Christian faith, your love of God, and your belief that this is what business is about: earning the money and then putting it where it is going to do the most good. And you're taking this a step further. Later this year, you're going back to Mount Hagen, not just yourself and your wife, Alison, but also with three members of AFD team.
Yes, unfortunately this time we were unable to bring the aircraft for many practical reasons to the Isle of Man. It was the original plan, so that our team could get to see it, but decided that it would be nice if at least some of our colleagues could go and see what we've had the privilege of seeing, how this really works on the ground or in the air around Papua New Guinea. And I have to say, we had a significant number of our staff would like to go to it, which says a lot about how engaged they are in both generation of the funds and the giving away of them. And so we had several rounds of competition trying to be very objective about who should go. But three of our colleagues have been selected. And after this year's charity event, about the week afterwards, we set off. And we're all really excited about it. Alison and I are really excited that others get the privilege of seeing what we've seen with our own eyes, watching how the operation works, because we all think it's just about the planes, but it's not. It's about the engineers, it's about the parts, it's about the people who do the loading, people who organise the administration, people who deal with the radio communication so that we can talk to the bases that they're going to. So three of our team are going to see that, and they're going to make themselves available to you, Judith, so that you can talk to them.
David, you read my mind. And you can be sure I will be talking with those three team members before and after their trip to Papua New Guinea. In the meantime, thank you to my guest this morning, David Doricott, director of the Ramsey-based Postcode People.
Your name is like honey on my lips. Your spirit's like water to my soul. Your word is a lamp to my feet. Jesus, I love you. I love you.
What is a vineyard church? That's what we're going to find out now in conversation with husband and wife, Matt and Katrina Baptist. I'd heard that they'd started a vineyard church here on the island. So a few days ago, I popped into their gloriously sun-drenched beachside house in Peel to find out more. Here's Matt to firstly give us a little bit of background.
Well, Vineyard Church is a large movement. I think we prefer to be known as a movement rather than a denomination. Started in the early 80s in the US and has grown since then, really. We now have 2,500 churches and 95 countries worldwide, so a big representation. But we really felt that Vineyard wasn't represented on the island. And we have a background in ministry with Vineyard Church. So when we started to explore a calling to do more for God, Vineyard was the place we went to.
Katrina, does it appeal to a certain age group?
It's a good question, Judith. And every community is different, so every vineyard is different. There's over 100 in the UK, and each of those has a different feel. And I think that's beautiful, isn't it? That there's so many different expressions of church, just like we're all different people and different communities. The community that we're starting here, it's fairly relaxed. They call it the radical middle that we operate in. So we're theologically orthodox, but methodologically maverick. Is that the right word?
Yeah. So what are we saying? That you're based on conventional Bible teaching?
That's right. So we have our own statement of faith, but it's based on the Nicene Creed. So it's the same values as the other major Christian churches, but we might do things a little bit differently. So perhaps we don't meet in a traditional church. We'll meet maybe in a cafe. We've met on the beach. We've gone for walks. We go to the pub, all different places. Sometimes we're at home. So we're out and about more than staying in one place.
Is this a kind of pioneering church in a way?
To be honest, I didn't know what the pioneering church was until we started doing this. But yeah, it's very similar to the pioneer church, more of a missional church at the moment. So we're out and about in the same way that Jesus was. So when you look in the Bible, Jesus was out and about 78% of the time. Only 22% of the time he was teaching or ministering in a synagogue. So we're a little bit more like that.
Matt, can I ask you, how does this work structurally, administratively?
We are licensed as vineyard pastors and we have gone through training, as you'd imagine. Now, we did a long stint in vineyard in ministry before we reached the Isle of Man, so we were able to lean onto that learning as well. But Vineyard, as a church planting movement, has got quite a large dedicated resource, which we call Multiply, which takes people through right from the moment they feel to be called, through a discernment process, and then through an equipping phase in order to ensure that their vision for church aligns with the Vineyard values. And then administratively, we have a structure, as you'd imagine, where we have mentors and spiritual direction, and we have area leaders, and we get together with all those people on and off islands so that we can learn and be better equipped.
Leadership is demanding, so it's good that you've got somebody who is there for you. That's really important, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It's one thing I have noticed since moving into a pastoral role is that there is a great deal of assumption that pastors have got it all together and you know it all off the top of your head, and it's simply not true. We do need support. All the leadership in all the churches need support and need people to go to talk to where we can have a safe place also. And that is really, really important.
Katrina, how are you letting people know about this? What are you doing?
Well, we're trying to take a fairly gentle approach. We're probably about a year in. We started meeting in September. So we've been gathering a core group of people and trying to sort of set the culture of the group, which has been really nice. We have got a Facebook page and we've got a website and we have a WhatsApp community, which means that people can join, but that their details are secure so that we're GDPR compliant and there's no data breaches. And otherwise, it's word of mouth, really. I'm so fortunate to know a lot of different people and you know what the island's like. So, yeah, we're out and about.
Now, I am hearing lots of mentions about a quiet revival, people feeling that there's something going on. Are you feeling that as well, Matt?
Absolutely, yeah. And there was a report recently also which backed that up, that people are searching for more. I think post-COVID is a really important time for us now as well, and also the explosion in content that people can get hold of. I think people are searching and maybe not finding satisfactory answers in the general media and TikTok and Facebook. So they're looking for things that are deeper. I think of it like an awakening. I think there's an awakening of people who are searching for something, and the harvest is ready, you know. And as Katrina said, you know, Vineyard offers a slightly different approach. You know, people take their coffee in hundreds of different ways, and Christianity can present itself in a number of different ways too. And I think our way would be to try to create a space and a place where people can belong first, and then that leads to belief. And I think that's the journey we'd like to take people on.
Katrina, do you have any services as such?
No, we don't. We do have Bible study. It's a little bit like a service. It's midweek because there's lots of things happening already on a Sunday. So at the moment we meet midweek, and in that you'll see elements of what you see at church. And it's not the same every week. At the moment we're doing a course. We've been kindly lent that course by Alex Brown. So we're doing the Lord's Prayer. Sometimes we do have music. Sometimes we'll listen to music or we'll sing. We do communion. We do a Bible study. But we're not in a church building and it's not on a Sunday morning. We're at the gathering stage of church planting. So I like to describe us not as a cup of coffee. I say we're more like an artisan bakery. So we can do some things and we can do those really well, but we can't do everything because we're too small. So I think we're just going to keep doing what we do and keep gathering in lots of different places and spaces for a while, for a bit longer.
The best way to connect with us is through Facebook. We have a Facebook page. You can find us there. We are Vineyard Church Isle of Man. It's that simple. You'll find our details on there. Or you might spot us out in the street and you might see a card floating around.
And you might indeed see Matt and Katrina Baptist and their friends out and about. Because showing God's love through little random acts of kindness in the local community is very much a part of Vineyard Church. Jesus, I love you. And now it's notice board time, beginning today, Sunday the 29th. This year's annual Big Hymn Sing is this afternoon at Trinity Methodist Church at Rosemount here in Douglas. There'll be a rehearsal for choirs at 2 o'clock, led by Dr. Peter Littman. Then there'll be a break, followed by a short service starting at 4:30. This is open to everyone. It'll be a really good sing, and the festival organist is Gareth Moore. And if you want another good sing, the Mariners Choir will be in Selby Methodist Church for a service starting tonight at 6:30, at which Mrs. Sue Yardie will preach. And as usual, this will be followed by supper and community hymn singing. On to the week ahead now, and St. Thomas's Church, just off the promenade by the Gaiety Theatre here in Douglas, offer you an hour of popular music this Wednesday evening in the company of the Lonvain Ladies Choir, conducted by Christine Bragazzi. It starts at 7:45 with free admission, refreshments afterwards, and a retiring collection if you'd like to donate. On Thursday, this week's summer concert in St. Catherine's Church in Port Erin will be given by the Meadowside Choral Society. That's this Thursday evening at 7:30, with free admission and a retiring collection if you'd like to help with expenses. And as our National Week approaches, it's Flower Festival time. St. Andrew's United Reformed Church on Glen Crutchery Road here in Douglas are having a flower festival as part of their 200th anniversary year celebrations, with the story of St. Andrew told in the floral designs. The flower festival is open from Friday the 4th to Tuesday the 8th of July, and St. Andrew's will be open each day from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m, except next Sunday the 6th, when the church will open at 12:30 after the morning service. Of course, you're most welcome to come to the morning service if you wish. Sunday morning worship in St. Andrew's is every week at 11 a.m. Also, as part of the festival in St. Andrew's, on Friday the 4th at 7:30, there's a summer concert of light entertainment with the choir Manx Voices, led by Angela Stewart. Entry is free with refreshments available, and if you come early, you can enjoy the magnificent floral designs before the concert starts. And there's a flower festival in Russian Parish, and you're invited to visit four churches in the south to enjoy floral displays on the theme Beautiful Words, celebrating the written word in song, poetry and literature. Refreshments will also be available. Kirk Christ Russian will be open each day from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. from the 2nd to the 9th of July. The Abbey Church in Ballasalla, St Mark's Church and Maloo Parish Church are also open daily from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m, but their dates are slightly shorter. Those three churches are open from the 3rd to the 8th of July. Glenmay Chapel's Craft Market is open once again, Saturday, July the 5th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. in Glenmay Chapel and Community Centre. Homemade produce and handicrafts by local artists and much more. It's free entry with homemade light lunches available too. Just head for Glenmay and look out for the bunting and the banners. Also on Saturday the 5th, there are strawberry teas at Christ Church at the Dune. Served from 2 p.m, they include a selection of sandwiches, cakes, strawberries and cream, and freshly brewed tea. £10 per person for adults and £5 for children, with takeaways available. Dorby Church on the West Coast invites everyone to join them at their anniversary summer concert service with the choir Manx Voices, who'll perform 9 pieces of choral music and will lead community singing. The concert service is next Sunday the 6th at 6:30 in Dorby Church and will be followed by a Dorby tea in the schoolrooms. Everyone is welcome. Also on the 6th, Bride Methodist Church invite you to their Sunday School Anniversary Service, next Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock. Mrs. Jenny Casson will lead the service, the Sunday School children will be taking part, and there'll be afternoon tea following the service. And finally, a reminder about the Lord's Prayer event in the Cathedral next Sunday the 6th at 6 p.m. with the Archbishop of York. It'll be a relaxed evening, lasting about an hour and a half, during which time Archbishop Stephen will be talking about the Lord's Prayer. He says, in less than 70 words, Jesus gives us a prayer to learn by heart and a prayer to get inside our hearts. He believes that these are words to lead us all to a better, fuller life. There'll be time for questions and conversation too. It's completely free and everyone is welcome. And that's all for now. But I'll be back tonight at 9 o'clock, opening the virtual lounge door and inviting you to join me for easy listening music and your requests and dedications. And I'd love you to join me if you can. And so, until whenever we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for listening, and I wish you and those you love a blessed and peaceful week and a very good morning.